前は畑、葉に水を引くまではどこからでもまで攻められる。四方に備えるだけでも四、五詰めに二目、どう少なく見積もっても足を入れて七。
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Retro Movie Podcast, a podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to stand inside a doorway is waiting to smack people on the head, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thanks. Yeah, it's my favorite pastime.
Mm-hmm.
Usually once or twice a day at work, I go stand by the front door with a club.
Yep.
Test people's reflexes.
I say, yeah, great deniability. Like, oh, I'm just testing them.
Yeah, yeah. Huh? Testing the club, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't know you were going to walk by.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the podcast where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, we post pretty much every Friday on podcast services and YouTube. But yeah, last time we watched The Seventh Seal. And of course, we are then going to Seven Samurai because Perk, the connection being number seven.
Number seven.
A bit strenuous, but we definitely wanted to get this movie because this is one of the greatest films of all time, one of the most hyped films of all time. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about it with you, Perk. Why don't you intro it for us?
Yeah, all right. So Seven Samurai is a 1954 joint directed by Akira Kurosawa, starring most notably Toshiro Mifune. It's about seven samurai.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, thank you. It's about a little town who's under siege by bandits, and they need help, so they get recruit seven samurai to defend their town, and antics ensue. Some fun facts about this one. Kurosawa was pressed by the production companies on timeline a couple times, and as things grew longer and longer, production was closed down as like a threat. And so Kurosawa would then just like go fishing until the production companies realized how much money they already had put into it and realized that it was a sunk cost. So at least twice the production was closed down and Kurosawa waited them out because he knew it was a bluff.
Yeah, which is wild because that would not work today. Today, Warner Bros. Be like, nope, tax write-off,
we'll,
you're done.
We'll either write it off as taxes or we'll get in some, you know, just shift director to finish it off.
Yeah.
And also for the village, Kurosawa wrote a full registry of all 101 inhabitants of the village and their familial relations and everything so that the extras had something to like base their character work on. And then Toshiro Mifune says that, or had said that this was his favorite role because he could kind of just be himself as Kikuchiyo.
Well, one more fun fact, Perk, we're recording this on April Fool's Day and it's actually his birthday today.
Really?
Yeah, which kind of plays into his character a little bit, kind of a fool,
kind of a goof, yeah,
a goofy guy. Perk, why don't you start us off? What did you think of Seven Samurai?
I understand why why everybody talks about this one. I've seen it pegged as like the first like true modern action movie, and I understand. You can see so much of this movie that was like pioneering at the time that has been recycled to no end because of how good of an idea it was. Like the, you know, getting together a band of heroes. Mm-hmm. I've only seen that five times this year alone, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. I really, really liked this movie. I was, I think, most intimidated by the runtime. 'Cause 3.5 hours, but also it's kind of not true because there's a really long opening credits and there's a 10-minute intermission. So it's not really that full length. But it turned out that all of that time was required, in my opinion, and it never drags at all. And I think it's so clear why this movie was so influential. And it's so clear to me anyway that a lot of studios were like, oh, let's take the Seven Samurai movie, but let's cut it down. Let's shrink it down and make it like 1.5, 2 hours, you know, and just make a different version of it. But to me, it's like inferior because this movie like uses all the time very effectively to build up relationships, build up the town, draw out the combat to make it feel more realistic of like, this is a siege. This is not just one final battle that's like super climactic. Like this is multiple battles of attrition. And it just all worked. I think that it was a really, really well done film and some really cool shots, great characters, great setup, payoff. There's so many things that are set up super well and then paid off super well. Yeah, it's clear that Kurosawa knows what the fuck he's doing. Like this dude knows how to make a good movie.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do have a few things that I didn't love, but realistically, they're kind of like drops in a bucket. Because so much of the story and the direction is amazing given the time. And this is the first time Kurosawa ever used multiple cameras. Crazy because everything is edited so well. You know, it feels very modern is the wrong word, but all of the editing and stuff feels very smooth for someone who it's their first time using multiple cameras.
And everything's so readable. All the action, you understand what's happening, you know where these are, like the whole scene of them going with the map, like here's the map, here's where we are in real life, here's the map. Like it's not like exposition because they're just showing you and then it makes sense later, you know what's happening, you know people, like it's amazing how complex the action becomes and yet you know exactly what's happening. And the sets really adds to it. The sets are like so well done, like feel so authentic. The extras I think are great, like they're running around a lot in kind of groups but they feel, you know, very frenetic. And then yeah, just the main cast of characters I think is really great. So I was really just blown away by how well he directed the film.
To circle back to one thing you said about how like it's so well shown how everything's laid out because we watch them mapping things and prepping defenses and stuff. It's cool to see, you know, even way back when everything was more focused on dialogue in older films and to be able to give the audience all of that info of the layout of the town and the defenses and the like the terrain and all that, to give all that info just by the characters talking about it and planning around it. It's just cool because it's the director holding our hand and like introducing us to it without just giving us like a verbatim, like, I don't know, exposition. It's more like exposing through story mechanics that make sense, which I like.
Yeah. All the dialogue feels genuine. Like I'm thinking of like the plan at the gate of like, all right, we're letting one in. Let one in and then jump out, or let two in, then we jump out. Like all that stuff is, and it, you see why it works. You see it like, and these guys are not easy to take down. They're on horses. Like horses are scary. And the one
honestly,
thing
I was
that took
terrified
me,
watching the movie because like these are pretty obviously real horses. Someone could just get kicked and die. With how some of these horses are acting, like
that one horse is like bucking constantly was like really frightening. The only thing that took me out of this movie at all was like, they can't attack the horses. Cause it's, which I wouldn't necessarily want to see that, but I would assume in a real situation, you're going to be attacking the horses. That's like the only thing I could, that like brought me out. And just going back to like the structure of this movie, you know, we start off with the farmers and then going to find the samurai and they get all of them. And then they get back to the village and I pause them like, how is there 2 hours left of this movie? You know, if this is a modern film, we'd have like 45 minutes to an hour left, you know, but it's like, no, they take the time to learn about the town, to build the relationships, to set up plot points. And then the combat itself, it's like four battles and like they're fighting 30 guys, which is not a lot. It doesn't feel like a lot compared to like modern movie, big budget action scenes, but it's a lot for these people. And like they only take out a few at a time. Like, I don't know. It just felt so grounded and I haven't seen an action movie like that in a while.
No, it feels like a very realistic scale, right?
Yeah.
Cause you'd think, oh, what? It's only 30 guys. You just have these superhero samurai, but it's not like that because these aren't superheroes and we don't get to see one guy running through thousands of CGI zombies and stuff like that. It's like very realistic that, you know what? They got rid of all 30 of the bad guys, but it cost them 4 out of 7.
Yeah.
The stakes feel very real And the scale feels right where, yeah, one samurai being able to take out five of those guys is like beyond a challenge. Like it's not not a given at all.
Yeah. Even what I call the Chad samurai, just the fucking goat dude who he's like the master martial artist.
The old dude?
The guy who goes out and gets the musket in the night. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's the best. He fucking dies. I'm like, are you kidding me? He was the best among them.
By your classic off-screen musket shot. Unfortunate. Yeah.
But like even him, like it takes him all night to get that musket. He only takes out two people. And you like in a normal movie or a modern movie, it would be taking out like 15 guys, you know, just going through the camp, slicing people, you know, all that. Even though I thought we were gonna get like a stealth section of them going to the bandit camp. It's like, no, they just light the house on fire and then just chop who they can as they run out. Like it feels just very like down and dirty, but like that's how things would be, you know? Yeah, it's really good, man. We just don't get action like this. The only thing I can think of is like John Wick. But even that is pretty.
But that's an example of like the scale is wrong because we've turned the main character into a superhero, right?
Yeah.
So he kills what, hundreds of people in each of those movies probably. And
yeah,
it's while it's awesome. Like, don't get me wrong. I love the John Wick movies. It's just those movies are not nearly grounded in the same way that this one is.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. I meant grounded in the fact of like, people are being killed in a more grounded way, I guess.
Sure, sure.
And we see more fatigue from the protagonist. But yeah, the scale is completely different. It's completely like nonsensical. What do you want to get into next? I want to talk about characters, but is there anything else you want to talk about before that?
No, we can go characters.
All right, let's talk about these characters. So it's like Mifune's character, Kikuchiyo. Kikuchiyo. Initially, I'm like, what is this guy doing? I don't like him. He's too goofy. But then for me, as movie progress, like he is the most essential character in this movie. And he brings the entire thing together. And I love the way he went out of like, you know, taking out the last person, but he dying in the process. And like a lesser movie would have said, I was expecting a line of like, he was born a farmer, but he died a samurai. They don't need to say that. Like it's kind of implied by his actions, but just like his progression and of, you know, realizing how he cares for people and, you know, the death of the people who he likes passing, like affecting him, but also him representing the farmers in a way because of his background and him, you know, arguing with the samurai of like, yeah, they do this shit because you made them do this shit because you guys are horrible. Like, he's just like such an essential character. And I was very surprised by him in this movie.
Yeah, he's great. And Mifune is, like hailed as one of the best actors in Japanese history for good reason. He's fantastic. But yeah, at the start, he just kind of seems like a goof, but I think he's more just like uncomfortable by the presence of real samurai and curious of their ways and stuff like that. And you're right. Cause the farmers have their code. The samurai have their code, and he's the bridge, right? Because he's he's part of both worlds.
Yeah.
And so when they see stuff like, oh, they took all this stuff from samurai, it's like, well, the samurai probably pilfered their village too. Like, it's what they have to do to survive. Stuff like that. And his arc is great because, like, he kind of thinks of the farmers as less than him, right?
They're weak, they're wimpy.
Yeah. Even though, you know, maybe just projecting his past, but as he, you know, grows over the course of the movie and learns his responsibilities, and I think they do a really good job of showing his reaction when Gorebe?
The samurai or the farmer that dies?
The samurai.
Okay, yeah. The farmer is Yohei that dies as well. Yeah.
But when the samurai dies because he was alone holding the post because Kikuchiyo left his post.
Yep.
And he, like, it's Mifune does such a good job of showing, like, with facial expression, his understanding of, like, oh, this is my fault.
Yep.
And yeah, when Yohei dies as well, and it's because he was left at that post. And, you know, that's once again Kikuchiyo's fault, and the way he internalizes that and goes and sits with the graves, like the progression of his character is fantastic. Yeah. And then, yeah, when he goes into frenzy mode at the end and does everything he can to save these people, even costing him his life. Mm-hmm. It's just an amazing character arc.
Yeah.
Like one of the best, like, reluctant hero, like, ambivalent turned good type stories that I've ever seen.
Yeah. No, yeah. He's so good. And I love how that term was set up too, of like the kid telling him how cool Chad Samurai is, of like, oh, he got that muskies, he can brag about it. And Kikuchi, he's like, ah, whatever, I don't care. But then he's like, I'm gonna go get my own musket.
Yeah.
Yoni disguised himself. But yeah, and then that was his hubris that cost these people their lives. And yeah, I wrote him off so much because he's like, why is he like barking like a dog? Like, what is his deal for so much of this movie? But when they get to the town and everyone's afraid and he does the fake alarm and like,
that was a good scene.
That was a great scene. Yeah. It's like, he knows what's up. And the old man comes down. He's like, what's the problem? He's like, nothing. We're good now. So yeah, he was great. I thought the leader samurai, the bald samurai, was really fascinating. And, you know, him and his friend being like two of the three survivors being the only ones that actually wanted to die in this, you know, is very symbolic. But you know, he would be the hero, right? Like, he would be their typical hero to me. But I think Kikuchi, you know, stands him up because his arc is more interesting and he's more essential to like the heart of the movie.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think they do a good job with the character of the old central samurai.
Shimada, I think his name is.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm just going based on appearance because I'm not good at all these Japanese names. It's a lot.
Fair enough. But yeah, he's great. I think that the intro scene for him is fantastic.
Yeah, perfect just display of character.
Yeah, cutting in on a scene where you've got hundreds of samurai who don't know what to do, and you've got this one who's going to go save a kid for no other reason than saving a kid.
Right.
Really establishes where his morals sit right from the start. Kind of puts him as like the moral pillar, to reflect other characters against. And yeah, he's great as well. That was one thing I really appreciate, is just their attention is given to most of these characters. Like some of the peripheral samurai don't get as much attention, but they still have their own like character traits. It's kind of the same as like, similar to what I felt with 12 Angry Men, right? Mm-hmm. Where even though there's all these characters and most of them aren't like given tons and tons of time, you at least kind of get a vibe from each of them.
Yeah.
And I felt kind of similarly with this one too.
The only one I didn't really get a vibe on was his friend who joined.
Yeah.
Cause he kind of looked similar to another samurai who was like the like kind of cheerful guy.
Yeah.
So I kind of had a hard time telling them apart at times. And even the cheerful guy and like the woodcutting guy were kind of similar and both being kind of like happy and jokey. But the woodcutting guy tried to like talk to the farmer whose wife was kidnapped, which that was him trying to reach out. And that was nice. But and then the fat farmer causing him his life because him trying to get his wife and everything. That was a nice other little side plot. I think I would have liked a little bit more characterization in some of the samurai, but they mostly work for me.
Especially when, here's my hot take.
Hot take.
I think we could have gotten rid of everything to do with Shino.
The farmer guy?
No, the farmer's daughter.
Oh, the girl with the kid samurai.
I thought that kind of just felt like, so I will say, you know what? This is probably a pretty good reflection of like what actually goes on. And
yeah,
it's interesting. It shows us more like character development with, is it Kikuchiyo? Sorry.
The kid?
Katsuhiro. The kid samurai.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Shino isn't really a character so much as just like an item of interest.
She's more of a plot device. Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah,
their chemistry, I don't really buy because they're just kind of off screen in love, which, you know, it isn't necessarily a problem, but it feels like a very one note relationship. And it's just, you know, to give development for Katsuhiro and to create that conflict with the old man hit her dad because he was so worried about that.
Which, can I say, that one of probably a favorite line of the movie. Because, okay, my initial reading of that, so Manzo goes to the old man. He's like, I don't know, man, these samurai coming in. What I'm going to do about the women? I thought he was like, he was single and he was worried that the samurai were going to take all the single ladies.
Mm.
And so, and the old man says, bandits are coming.
Yeah.
Your head is on the butcher block and you're worried about your whiskers. I fucking love that line.
That's like, it's a good great line. Yep.
Then to find out it's about his daughter, I'm like, okay, I get that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I partly agree. I don't know. I think it's a good representation of just the classist society and patriarchal society that, of the time. And I think it does help the kid's character of the loss of innocence of one with her and then also him. The first time he kills somebody, I think it's in the final showdown, you can see him like scream and kind of cry when he like, you know, stabs a bandit. So I think it works for that. Her herself, she doesn't really have much to do and she's more of a plot device, but that's, again, women were basically property back then. So it's like, it kind of is accurate. I don't know.
Right. And yeah, basically my suggestion is you can make a character arc for, you know, the young inexperienced samurai without having to play it off just like an item of attraction and like just, you know, the one female, the one of a couple, but smaller female character. Those were the only scenes for me that like felt long and dragged on a little bit. Cause it's like this, I don't know. It's not like bad or anything. It felt unnecessary. Cause you can show him being like shell shocked by war, or, you know, when he does, you know, get his first kill, see him grapple with that.
Yeah.
But you could have had him, you know, converse with a townsperson or another samurai or something. And I think you could have gotten the same point across and maybe just trimmed that storyline out of there. But I could just be waffling. I don't know.
Yeah. I hear you. I think I didn't hate it. I think it could have been improved, but I think it was mostly fine. And, you know, we didn't get them going on dates and stuff. Really. It was like,
yeah,
we see them meet and then we see them meet up later. Then they bang, whatever. And it's fine.
Yeah.
I hated her dad though. Her dad's the fucking worst. Manzo, he can go die.
probably what someone would act like. I get it, but he's a bit out of pocket. And then yeah, to the other like main character that we kind of actually follow a little more actively is Rikichi.
Yes. Yeah.
The farmer. The villager whose wife we learned was kidnapped by the bandits. Mm-hmm. I thought his thing was great.
Yeah. They did such a good job. It was not exposition, man. They just showed everything.
Yeah. And
he never even actually opens up. We just see what happened.
Right. At one point he says like, that was my wife. And that's all we get. But you do get to see him develop because you understand after learning about his wife, you understand why he's so concerned at the start, why everything is so we need this. Like we need to stop these bandits. It's there's obviously a personal vested stake other than just like the safety of the village.
Yes. Yeah.
Safety of his wife.
And you can see the one who recommends. We want to kill them all. Like, right. I want to kill them. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when, you know, they get to the village and they run into each other and she's so shocked or ashamed or something
that
you know, reflexively runs back into a burning building. And you see that kind of break him, but like he begins to mend as the story goes on too. And you can see him like contributing in the village a little more. And when he comes in to yell at Manzo for being a dingus, like it's, you know, part of coming to terms with the way things are, I guess. I don't know. I just thought that actor did a great job. And like you're saying, it's an entire arc for a character that's almost played without like dialogue. Right. Like,
there's not
too much like full exposition. It's just kind of you watch what unfolds with him.
Yeah. This movie just does a great job overall of showing instead of telling. And I really appreciate that. I do want to ask you, what was your take on Kikuchiyo saying to the baby, "This is me." That, I don't know, like, I'm glad that we got that information just additionally, but also felt that one felt a little bit on the nose of like, "This is me," when he's holding the baby.
I think it may be a case where it's more eloquent in Japanese. Because it's a little bit on the nose. But also that scene really worked for me. I just liked that he had that realization, like sitting there in the pond, like, or in the river, like understanding what just happened and how it mirrors his own past. Yeah. It may have been a little like, that's a hard one. Cause how do you show? Yeah,
it's tricky.
Right. How do you do something that explicit without a little line in there?
Yeah.
Cause you could just, like, if he just stares at the baby and cries or something, you can make your interpretation, but I'm too dumb. So I probably would have just thought he was like, "Oh no, horrors of war."
Yeah. Maybe if he like whisper it to himself instead of like shouting it to his comrades. I don't know. Yeah. It felt very blunt. And I wish it would have been a little more eloquent, but you're right. Maybe the Japanese translation is what
It might be a little more eloquent, I would think. But aside from that, that scene actually has my only other problem with this movie. Oh dear, my man went wild with the wipe cuts. the wipe cuts, which, you know what? They're pretty cool, right? And at the time when you're stitching together, like, you're literally like cutting one line of film, like one film strip here and cutting the other one 90% and then, you know, moving your way down. It's cool tech. It sticks out like a sore thumb. And on multiple occasions, the wipe cut comes in way too soon to let like an emotional moment breathe. And that's one of them where, you know, he's sitting in the river. This baby is me. And then it's whoop on to the next. And it's like, oh,
yeah,
I see what you're going for, because he uses those wipe cuts when there's like a little bit of a time gap. Makes sense.
Yeah.
But when it is like, it's a little distracting, right? I mean, this is a long before I was doing dumb stuff, like having PowerPoint slides that like bounced into frame.
Right. You know? Right.
Unfortunately, it does kind of pull you out of like those emotional moments, because I think it's too quick of a cut. Like, you got to give it a little bit of time to breathe. And then those would be perfect moments for like a fade out rather than a wipe cut. But he probably just thought they were cool. And I agree. Like,
that's the thing, is like, I don't know. I probably should care more because I'm an editor, but it's like, I just view that of like, oh, that was the time period. Like, how many transitions they have available? Like three? Like,
yeah, like fade out, fade in. That's probably most of it
now. Yeah.
And jump cuts. But yeah, to see the wipe. I mean, we haven't seen anything like that in any of the other movies we've watched on this classic thread. So
yeah, the only, whenever I think of like stuff like that, I think of like Star Wars, of like the obnoxious transitions in Star Wars.
Yeah. It's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
George Lucas has said many times that like his biggest inspiration was Kurosawa. So,
oh, interesting. Oh,
yeah. I
didn't know that.
Well, there's a lot. There's a lot of stuff in here that I could like get kind of Star Wars vibes. I actually noted down in the score of this movie feels very like cousin to some of the Star Wars stuff, which I thought was great. And that might be like this score was based on like another prior score, but just to hear kind of some similar motifs, I felt, to like space opera type stuff.
Right.
That was cool.
Right. Speaking of technical stuff, I was baffled that there is slow-mo in this movie.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
It looked good. Like, there was two slow-mo shots. I'm like, how the fuck were they doing slow-mo back then? Like,
Cause it doesn't look like, it doesn't look like a slow-mo instance where you just slow down the same frame rate. It does look like the frame rate was dialed up.
Yeah, it looks like they captured with a high frame rate camera somehow.
Yeah.
I was baffled. I was so baffled there was slow-mo.
and you're right. It does look good. honestly, I could have even done with a little more of it, but I'm sure technical limitation is yeah. It's really hard for stuff like that.
We don't want to turn into Wonder Woman, all right? That's this slow-mo is absolutely out of hand in that movie.
We don't need to go Zack Snyder. Although, fun fact, if you're looking for another movie, Zack Snyder called Rebel Moon his new Netflix duology. He called that Seven Samurai in Space.
Yep.
Which I'm sure does an insane disservice.
Oh, yeah.
I have not heard a good thing about Rebel Moon. So,
yeah. The last thing I want to mention about this movie, at least from my end, is just like some of these shots are awesome. And the last shot, or one of the last shots of the four graves and then the three remaining samurai. Are you kidding me, dude? One of those badass shots I've ever seen. It's fucking awesome.
Honestly, when I was looking at that shot, I was like, oh, this is giving Wes Anderson right now.
Yeah.
The way that this shot is structured is so. Such a gorgeous shot.
That shot goes so hard. And there's other great shots too, but that shot, I was like, fuck yes. Amazing. And then the last line of like, we still lost this battle. This victory goes to them. You know, we're still on the losing side. Great. And then the kid just being, he's lost his innocence. But unexpectedly melancholic ending. I would say, to an action movie.
To kind of just touch on with the shots, and I think the cinematography, like the direction is great and like surprisingly clean for a movie this old, but the cinematography is also just outstanding. It's crazy that you can like feel how green everything is when like the kid's laying in the flowers and in the forest. It's like, this is a black and white image and it's green. My brain's filling in around it just because everything is so beautifully shot.
Yeah.
Just stunning visuals to on top of everything else that's great about this movie.
That was another funny line when they're planning out, you know, everything, and they're walking through that flower area, and the leader goes, "Oh, it's such a beautiful area. Too bad it's a murder zone. Trap. It's a death trap." Yeah. That made me chuckle a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, talking about recommendations on this movie, it's like. I could say I would recommend every movie based on this one, but I would recommend none of them because I think of the ones I've seen, this one does it better. And it's because of the longer runtime. Like, I feel like any modern movie, I'm thinking of like Magnificent Seven, for example. And in the modern era, the focus is going to be on the seven, right? Who are the best actors, the most famous people we can get? Each one's be characterized, you know, differently. It's going to be all on the seven and not as much care to be taken on the town and the people they're actually protecting. And this movie putting so much focus on all of it, on the people first, then the town, then the difficulty of the combat, just all comes together in such a beautiful way. Whereas modern ones, it's like, all right, we got the people and then final action sequence. Don't really give a shit about the people protecting. Like, it loses the heart. And so like, I think this is still the definitive way to watch this story.
Yeah. I am curious. I would like to check out the original Magnificent Seven because it came out in 1960, and that's only six years after Seven Samurai. Mm. So I'm curious to see like what the original American interpretation of it was.
Yeah, I've only seen the remake.
Yeah, I haven't even seen the remake. I've seen the god awful Sandler version.
Oh, the like, Ridiculous Six?
Yeah, Ridiculous Six. I've seen that one. It's awful, as you would expect. but I am curious to see what the original adaptation is. I'd like to check out some John Ford Westerns. We didn't really touch on Westerns too much in this strand, but that's okay because they're kind of a category all their own.
Mm-hmm.
But like, because John Ford was a big inspiration for Kurosawa. Mm. So I would be curious to check out some of like Ford's older Westerns and see kind of where maybe some things kind of were inspired over and then made their way back. Yeah, it's really cool, the web of inspiration in movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to. I've only seen like My Name is Nobody, but I haven't seen any of the classic like Clint Eastwood Westerns and like that. So that'd be a fun.
Yeah. I've seen Unforgiven Clint Eastwood, but that's like 90s. So I'm talking like, you know, they were making them in the 30s, older. Gotcha. Right? So
gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. All right, well, that is our review of Seven Samurai. Hope you liked it. Hope you go check out this movie if you haven't seen it. It's really freaking good. Before we end, Perk, I got a couple little bonus reviews to tell you about. First one is, I'll go first here. So when I was on a trip recently visiting some friends, and I was staying with one of them, and she is a big reality TV fan.
Mm.
And we're watching this show, Perk, called Vanderpump Rules. All right. Are you familiar with this show?
No.
Okay. I'm going to give you a brief plot rundown because the show is insane. Lisa Vanderpump, one of the previous Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, I think, got kicked out for reasons I don't really understand. Started this new show. She's a British restaurant magnate. She owns all these restaurants. All right. One of these restaurants is called Sir. Perk, what does Sir stand for? That's right. Sexy, unique restaurant.
Okay.
Okay. The show follows the bartenders, waitresses, waiters, and hostesses of this restaurant. So it's a bunch of 20-something, 30-something people. All right. And it's their lives, but she's like in very invested in their lives. It's very weird and awkward. I don't understand what she gets out of this, but whatever. So it's this group of people that are just, they're banging, they're hooking up, and they're cheating on each other constantly. I do not understand how these people are cheating on each other so much. It's driving me insane. but I hopped in around season five watching my friend, and this show is nuts. I'm not a reality TV fan. I understand that it has appeal for people. I'm not going to knock anybody who likes it. Not for me. I get so stressed out because these are like real people, but they're on a show, so they're probably acting not fully themselves, but like these people are on the show for like 5-10 years. Like this is a long time. It's like who's real and what's fake anymore. I don't know. And people are getting married in relationships and they're also cheating on each other. It's just, it's insane. Vanderpump Rules. I don't understand. Lisa Vanderpump, what are you doing? Why do you care so much about these people's lives? You're like 60 and super rich. And it's a wild show, Burke. All right. That's all I got to say. I understand when people get invested, but it's a wild premise. The only thing wilder is still The Bachelor to me, because the premise of that show is insane, but Vanderpump Rules, more power to you, I guess. Other thing I watched, so I don't know if you saw this, Perk, but the Spider-Verse team released a short.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, it's called The Spider Within. I watched it last night. It's nice. It's, you know, it's 5 minutes. It's about Miles having an anxiety attack, basically, about all the pressures of his life. And you know, it's Spider-Verse, so like it's really well animated. I think, you know, Miles, Shameik Moore, I think is the name of his actor, does a great job. There's not a lot of meat on the bone. It's so short. But I think it's well done. It's cool. I definitely check it out if you're a Spider-Verse fan. Just a nice little video to watch. So check that out. But yeah, that's all we got.
Do you think, maybe when watching that short, were you feeling like, what are you doing? Get back to finishing the third movie.
No, because it's very bare bones. Like,
okay.
It's in his room. So they already have those assets.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of him visualizing and then like boxes.
Okay.
It didn't seem like that much of a lift. So I'm not like mad about it or anything.
And gotcha.
If Sony forced them to do that, I'd be like, all right, don't force people to work more. But I don't. I mean, they just it felt like a passion project.
They just put it out on YouTube, right? Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah. It felt like a passion project, kind of give some nice mental health awareness.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Always. Nice always a good thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is our show for this week, and we're ending on an announcement. We are going to be going on hiatus for an undefined period of time. I am personally dealing with some life changes, and I'm not having as much time for the podcast as I would like. And also, I think it'd be a nice time to maybe rework a couple things and make the show even better. So we're taking a break after 100 episodes. We'll hopefully be back sometime this year. But until then, thanks everyone for watching up to this point. We'll see you when we see you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.